How about now? Are you still peaking? You're not too bad, even when I'm projecting.
It's like you talking to a pervert outside the bathroom.
You still peeking? I'm projecting. I'm peeking. I say as I am also looking in the bathroom window.
All right. Well, I can tell you that for this podcast, I'm doing something new. I left my phone in another room.
Ooh. Wow, spicing things up on the podcast.
Do you know why I left the phone in the other room?
I'm guessing it has something to do with the topic of today's episode. I did something different this week, too. I read a section of a 400-page book. Do you know why I read a section of a 400-page book?
Because you don't have the time or motivation to read the whole book?
That is exactly correct. I would put it down to time. If I got fired tomorrow, I'd probably do a lot more reading.
So I did read a few papers, and they convinced me to leave my phone in the other room because I found out that your phone affects your unconscious attention, meaning that your resources basically get used up. If you imagine your attention as RAM, I don't know what percent, 10% maybe, of your RAM is being used just by thinking about your phone being there, but it's not active thinking. So if you ask people, are you thinking about your phone right now? They'll say no, that is what these studies found. But if you just have the phone there, even if it's turned off, even if you're not getting notifications, some of your RAM is basically used up and you can't use that for any other tasks.
And that's influenced by like whether your phone is like visible or making contact with you, like having it in another room changes that?
Yeah. So I'll tell you about a few of the studies. There was one by Ward et al. 2017, and they had three different conditions. One was your phone was on your desk face down. Another was your phone was in your bag or pocket. And a third was in a completely other room. And they did tests for two different types of tasks. One is called the operation span task, which is basically, I give you a series of numbers, let's say 3, 5, 7, 8. And then you have to remember those numbers while you do another task.
So you're going to ask me at the end of the podcast to repeat 3, 5, 7, 8?
Yeah. And now I give you another task, which is what's 35 times 22?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I was told there would be no math.
Just make it up. I don't know.
70, 140 plus. Oh, geez. I already forgot what numbers I'm using. Oh, another 70. 1400 plus 70 1470.
What did I tell you to multiply?
35 times 22. 770. Oh, fuck.
Okay.
I was like double. I was way off.
And what were the four numbers I gave you?
3, 5, 7, 8.
I don't even remember what numbers I gave you.
Editor Diego is going to cut in and be like, he got them right or he got them wrong.
Exactly. But I guess we'll find out.
He got them right.
The clever podcast listener probably already knows if I got them right or wrong.
So that's the task, and that's a measure of kind of operational attention. And then there was a different task called Raven's Matrices, which is a measure of fluid intelligence. You know that one?
Classic IQ test thing, Raven's Progressive Matrices.
Yeah, so you can think of it like there is a pattern at the start, at the middle, and then at the end you have to show that you understand the pattern. So it'll be something like triangle, square, circle. Then the next one will be two triangles, two squares, two circles. And then the next one will be three triangles, three squares, and then fill in the last one yourself. So that would be an incredibly easy version. But for these, it's kind of a bit more complex, where maybe the number changes or the placement changes or what you're adding changes. So it's basically a test of kind of fluid thinking, creative thinking, being able to spot patterns and so on.
I'm horrible at those matrices and they're used a lot in IQ tests, but I'm not good enough at pattern recognition to know what that implies about me.
So they did both tests, the operation span task that we just failed at both, and the Raven's Matrices. They try to figure out, okay, what's the effect on a person's attention from having their phone there? Yeah. And there was a clear kind of step of diminishing attention. So When the phone is outside of the room, your attention is, I think it's normalized, so it's around 100 points.
Yeah, yeah.
Then when it's in your bag, it's about 92 points. And then when it's in front of you, it's about 85 points, let's say. So
to finish the Raven's progressive matrix, if I put my phone at my neighbor's house, I'll get like a 110 on this test.
They didn't test out progressively further away, but that's definitely something you can try if you want.
If I put the phone like directly touching my face, it would be even worse, or internally. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I'd say there's definitely an attention hog effect from your phone being right up against your face. I think the difference was about 10%. So you're about 10% slower at the 10% worse at the operation span task, and you're about 10% lower at the fluid intelligence task. And 10% in these tasks is a meaningful difference in terms of how people usually talk about these effects. So it's medium to large effect sizes, and it's the equivalent of being mildly sleep deprived.
I was going to ask you, is there like an effect size comparison to like beer or weed, because that would be the next thing I was asking, of like, okay, phones, people use them while driving also, so are we letting people drive drunk?
Well, there's already studies, I didn't read them recently, that says that using your phone, like being on a phone call, is the equivalent of driving drunk, but only like 2 or 3 beers or something, isn't it?
Yeah, come on. Oh, what, 2 or 3 beers and driving's a crime now?
Yes. So that was from one test, and they also looked at self-reported phone-related thoughts. So they asked, while completing today's task, how often were you thinking about your cell phone? And most participants said, not at all. That was the modal response. And they also asked, how much, in what way, do you think the position of your cell phone affected your performance on today's tasks? And most people also said, not at all. So it does show that, first, people don't have the metacognitive awareness to know the effect that's happening.
Yeah.
But also, it is probably one of those effects where it's kind of unconscious. So it's RAM processing that occurs without you thinking about it. And so if something happens to make it worse or better, you don't really know.
I can tell, by the way, that you just edited the episode that I was talking about my research, because it's the second in a row we talked about metacognitive awareness. Hell yeah. But no, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, that people would at least not expect that it would make any difference, whether it's like in your bag or the other room or whatever. So interesting that it is an unconscious effect.
Even when I'm reading these papers, I think, okay, but surely it can't be that bad, because like the phone is in my pocket. I'm not thinking about it. How can it be that effective on my attention? But I guess you would get 60% of the time, one extra out of the 10 fluid intelligence questions, right? That's really hard to quantify in terms of real life. Yeah. So you probably never notice it yourself.
Yeah, and like you said, the effect of mild sleep deprivation, like if you did just on a random day, one of these like progressive matrices, and then they were like, how much did the amount of sleep you got last night affect how you did on this? You'd probably be like not much at all. Like that had nothing to do with it. And then it would have an effect. So,
yeah. And there was another study that looked whether the phone was on or off. So instead they had the phone off on your table, off in your pocket, and off far away. And in an experiment too, in the same paper, they had the phone on but on silent in both, like all three conditions, and there's no effect whatsoever. So it doesn't seem to be kind of an anticipatory effect where you're like, oh, I'm expecting a message, I'm expecting a notification, I'm worried about something, a call coming in. It seems to be just the phone itself is kind of like a dark hole of attention where it's just pulling it in.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't even think of it as an anticipatory effect, but that busted my like quick working hypothesis, which was like, oh, maybe it's like a RAM opportunity cost thing, that you're constantly like, I better save just a little bit in the tank in case I want to scroll Instagram reels right now, in case I want to switch tasks, where you don't have the opportunity to switch tasks if the phone isn't in the room, but you also don't if it's off. So it's not that either. It's literally just if your battery's on, if you're close enough to spread your 5G to me, my brain is getting poisoned.
Yeah. And they also did what's called the sustained attention test, the go, no go. So it's basically, let's say red means stop and green means go, and you'll have colors appear. And every time green appears, you press the button as quickly as possible, and every time red appears, you don't. Usually they don't use those colors because we already have such an association with them that it'd be kind of automatic, but it's the type of like, try to respond as quickly as possible, but do inhibit that response if whatever the stimulus is
the symbol is different. Yeah, whatever it is.
And interestingly enough, they found no difference in that in terms of inhibition or attention in terms of like, I need to respond as quickly as possible. That didn't seem to be affected. So they postulated the effect is specific to attentional resource availability, not vigilance.
Okay. I'll take their word on it. That something's weird there to me that it's, if the sustained attention task is not affected by it, I struggle to see why. Maybe I'm over-indexing on the fact that it had an effect on the Raven's progressive matrices, but I see that as a task less guided by attentional effort and more guided by fluid intelligence, creativity, whatever. So I'm like, it's not making you less attentive, it's just making you stupider.
Well, it could be that if you're struggling to take in and process the information, it takes you longer. So
yeah, of course, that attention is such an overarching variable that it touches on everything. But yeah, weird finding. I don't know what to make of that one.
They also measured dependence, high dependence or low dependence on your phone. So they asked questions like, I would have trouble getting through a normal day without my cell phone, and using my cell phone makes me happy. And I guess if you marked very much or high on those two, you would count as a high dependence individual. And those with high dependence were more cognitively impaired by their phone being nearby than low dependence individuals.
That makes a lot of sense.
When I was looking at the graph, it made me wonder, like, is there only two or three low dependence individuals? Because in the graph, usually the mean showed that it was in steps. So like, let's say 3, 5, and 7 in the scale. Would be how it works. But for the low vigilance or low dependence individuals, it was like 6, 3, 7. So it like went down for having it in your pocket.
Yeah.
So it made me think, okay, I don't know if I want to trust this one as much, because it like for this much of a difference, even though it wasn't significant in like their measurements, it did go in a different direction and kind of made me question it a little. So I'm not sure on the smartphone dependence part of it, but in terms of the go, no go and attention, there is other studies that I'll talk about in a second that kind of confirm that part, but the dependence seems to be in and out in terms of how the studies include that part.
Okay. Yeah, I'm already a little shaky on some of the, like, when you are generalizing from highly abstracted, these really highly controlled psychological studies in labs to how they will inform like real world behavior. And then when it's also possible issues with sample sizes or sampling, if it's just really hard to find low dependence people, as I would expect it probably is, it makes me more worried. But I don't think this is the only evidence we have for this. I think we have lots of different sources of evidence on attentional problems from phones. I did read one study, by the way. We don't have to get to it quite yet, but I read one longitudinal study about, it was cited by Height in the book that I read, so I followed up on it, and it was about like thousands of Dutch teenagers and basically ADHD symptoms. And yeah, similar kind of findings that bigger phone dependency, or in this case bigger media multitasking behavior, self-reported rate was related to more attentional problems, and that those attentional problems grew over time across like a multiple wave study.
That's interesting. It connects to something I read in the review paper around people who use their phone more tend to also have lower inhibitory scores. So they're more impulsive, basically. Could be both ways. It could be using your phone more makes you low inhibition, or people who are low inhibition can't stop using their phone.
Yeah. Definitely.
But one of the implications from that study is what I did today. Basically, put your phone outside of your working area if you want to focus deeply. So put it in another room. And this kind of separation idea was pushed back sometimes in some of the papers, mostly because a paper by Shiva et al. And Clayton et al. 2014 and 2015 talked about how not having your phone with you creates increased anxiety.
Okay.
But the authors in this paper say that the experiment that they did to show that it increased anxiety, one, they took their phone from the participants without warning them beforehand or without telling them that it would happen beforehand. So it was kind of unexpected. And also, that was the Cheever et al. And then in the Clayton et al., they made the person listen to the phone ringing while it's in the other room.
That just is a torturous study. How did the ethics board accept that?
So yeah, not only were they separated, but they were like, oh, here, let's ring the phone too. So yes, that increased anxiety. So if you think that you're going to get a call and also lock your rooms somehow, then you might have increased anxieties. But if you just have it in another room and then you're happy to run to the other room if you get a call, you should be fine. Then there was another study in 2023. So this one was looking at the effect on more what they call basal attention resources. And the way they did it was two conditions. One, switched off, placed face down on your desk. Or two, switched off, placed outside the room. And this one, they did a task called the D2 or concentration and attention test. So this one is kind of a what they call a basic processing task. So it's like the most basic information, kind of the idea of the most basic way that you can go look for, process, and then kind of output information without having to do any particularly complex thinking. It's meant to be the most kind of monkey-brained attention test that you can do. The way it works is you'll have a load of D's, P's, Q's, and B's. So kind of all these lowercase letters that look the same.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them will have three dots above them. Some of them will have two dots below them. Some of them will have one dot above them. And those will kind of swap in and out. So not only do you have to find the specific letter that looks like the one you want, it also has to have the right number of dots below or above it. So
these sound like those tedious, controlled studies that people like you are really into.
It did look incredibly tedious. And they were meant to do it in person, but because of COVID, they had to send it out to people and just watch them over Zoom as they completed it.
Watch them do it on their phone.
So maybe an interesting confound having the laptop there, but the test is basically several lines of these letters. They were sent a package where they would open it at home. They would have loads of different sheets. There were, I think, 789 characters.
You shouldn't be allowed to legally send this stuff in the mail. This is a weapon.
And basically they said, okay, are you ready to start? Put your phone in the other room or put your phone on your desk and turned off. And then the experimenter just watched them over Zoom as they took a pen and just marked off all of the specific letters that they needed to mark off with the numbers on the right place. So very exciting, very engaging task. They had 49 participants, 42 after exclusions. It was basically then 21 per condition, so 21 with smartphone. And they also found a significant effect. So processed target objects, which was your speed, so that was just your raw processing speed, how many items were you able to tick, that one was affected by about 10%. So you were able to do, I think, 8 more letters by the end of time if you had your phone outside of the room. And then there was the error percentage, so your accuracy, that remained the same across conditions. So it didn't affect your error percentage, but it affected your processing speed. So that was another interesting finding. They also looked at smartphone dependence. These were German people, so it was a German version of the smartphone addiction scale.
So since they were German, the participants probably actually enjoyed this test.
Maybe, yeah. There's your confound. Give it to people who actually don't enjoy the test.
It was on Zoom and it was with Germans. How can we trust any of this?
Yeah, so you basically got increase of 10 letters, I see it here. Yeah, 10 letters, okay. A large effect. People with smartphone dependence did not get affected more or less. So the effects were the same regardless of your smartphone dependence.
Okay.
So their kind of takeaway was, the mere presence of your phone consumes cognitive sources and makes your attentional performance worse, regardless. You know, it could be that everyone is just dependent on your phone. So
that's what I was wondering. Like, I think if the same problem with the previous study where we said there might be a weird sample size for the non-dependent people, it's just because anyone doing any of these studies is dependent on their phone, and the people who aren't dependent on their phone are like at national parks and not participating in these studies.
Definitely. And another thing I thought was interesting is that one of the papers connected this to dual process theory.
Okay, nice. Everything comes back to it eventually. You have convinced my colleague, by the way, that our research is actually dual processing theory in disguise too, so thanks for that.
Nice. Well, everything is dual process theory, so...
It's true. She's when right. when you have two things, everything looks like one of those two things.
Damn right. So they talked about smartphone presence reduces cognitive capacity. So what we already know. But other studies have shown that if you have less cognitive capacity, you are more likely then to use system one heuristic thinking instead of system two thinking.
Yeah.
So what this means is that, I don't know if I would put it this heavily, but they talked about how it would then increase reliance on mental shortcuts. It means that people would evaluate options with less depth. People are more likely to accept simpler or inferior answers. So something like, why did this happen? And someone says, oh, obviously.
Because of minorities,
exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
You're more kind of likely to accept that than if you had more attentional resources. Now, knowing some people that I do who are willing, very happy to take those explanations, they don't seem like their attentional resources are being particularly targeted at the moment.
Is this to say, like, the dumbest people I know are that you don't need to take their attentional resources? Or
look, I'm talking to them. They don't seem particularly distracted.
Meanwhile, all they're actually thinking is, I wish I was on my phone right now instead of having to teach this guy about basic race theory.
Yeah, so that's the basic idea. Less attention, less ability to use system two thinking, more happy to focus on your biases, focus on your heuristics, and then you fall for the manosphere. That's the takeaway. Yeah. If you have your
or
phone
like
on your desk.
It's a vicious cycle that, like, the same way, like, you're watching Instagram reels on Instagram on your phone and you're being advertised to, and now you're more likely to buy into advertising because you're stuck in system one thinking and you think I do need yet another air fryer or whatever.
Yeah.
I do need a new nootropic stack.
How does that connect to studies you read?
Yeah, so Jonathan Haidt is, he's like a shadow member of the intellectual dark web, so it weirdly connects but doesn't connect. He's one of those, like, who's your other moral philosophy man who does, like, the meditation podcast?
Sam Harris?
Yeah, he's Sam Harris coded in that it's like, you're not Jordan B. Peterson. You're not, like, an absolute stark raving lunatic. But you have some strange opinions that make me a little nervous around you. But unfortunately, I read a big chunk of the Anxious Generation. This was Jonathan Haidt's bestseller book from 2 years ago. That's about how smartphones and social media are making Gen Z have goopy brains.
Which is the technical term.
Yeah, he didn't describe it like that. He said that there's four fundamental harms of social media and smartphones on Gen Z and younger generations. And I went into it kind of looking for a fight because I have a bias that I don't like this guy. But unfortunately, System 2 won out and his writing was pretty rational, reasonable, well argued. He's a good writer. Like, as much as I sometimes don't like hearing him on a podcast or something, when I do read him, like, he also wrote, I always mention The Emotional Dog and The Rational Tail. This is the dual process theory paper about moral judgments, so that we make our moral judgments automatically and based on emotion, and then we post hoc rationalize them based on reason.
One of the many animal models.
Exactly. The elephant rider, Have you ever met a dual process theorist who isn't a furry? I'm just asking questions, people. But yeah, no, his writing is always both well argued, but also just very kind of fluent and easy to read, nice to read. So it makes a lot of sense he would be now like this New York Times bestseller writer. He's like the perfect person to be writing these pop science-y books. He also previously wrote The Coddling of the American Mind. So I think that's the one where I was like, oh, hold on now. What was that? That one was more like, we need to be teaching different things in school, like don't always trust your feelings, and life isn't a battle between good people and evil people, and blah, blah, blah. This was like a more digestible version of that same message in a way, that it was kind of, it's aimed at parents and teachers and building on a lot of the kind of evidence that you mentioned. So he cites even some of the studies you mentioned of the mere presence studies. He also cites, for example, the Dutch studies that I mentioned, that was Baumgartner et al. 2018, showing one of these four fundamental harms for young people is attentional problems. So he mentioned some of it in this kind of mere presence kind of way, but also some leans on the longitudinal studies to make a developmental psychology argument that being a heavy social media and smartphone user not only puts kids at a higher risk or leads to a higher or has a higher association with ADHD symptoms, but over time, compared with a less phone using peer group, those attentional deficit symptoms get worse compared to their less smartphone using peers. But he structures the book based on not only attentional problems, but that also smartphones are bad for socializing children, that they have less kind of in-person social interactions and spend less time with friends, and kind of makes the whole loneliness epidemic argument that there's attentional problems, that there's sleep deprivation problems that come from smartphones, that smartphone addiction is likely to happen. I didn't read as much about the addiction and the other ones. I was focusing on the attention, since that's what we were reading. But yeah, I wish I could say that he was making outrageous claims. He really wasn't. He was making a lot of the same claims that you just made, and then basically turning these into kind of advice for parents and teachers of limit screen time, make your kids play outside more. He does a little bit of this, like, yeah, shadow dark web, intellectual dark web / manosphere thing of like, kids should be outside more and doing more risky unsupervised things, like send your kids to a summer camp or make them explore their city more, which, like, I don't know. Yeah, we need to raise tough young people. I don't know.
Make sure your kids aren't incels.
Yeah, exactly. But like, it's to a good end, but I think it's the classic thing of like, I found that smartphones are bad, therefore we should push my worldview to combat that. I think you can raise a perfectly well-rounded, like, ready to take on the modern world, less attention problem kids without also ensuring they have risky outdoor experiences. Like, I think it's okay to have an inside kid, but also limit their screen time and their dependence on their phone.
As an inside kid, if I wasn't raised as an inside kid, I wouldn't be here doing this podcast, I could tell you that.
Yeah, exactly. I would be smoking crack on the street corner or something. Now, I don't know what my, like, outdoorsy life would have been, but I don't see a world where, like, sending me to enough summer camps would mean that right now I'm at the national park instead of recording podcasts and teaching lectures and stuff. So
you just be one of those guys who's on top of a soapbox just telling everyone their opinions, but outside.
I would be living in a barrel. I would be Diogenes instead of a podcaster.
So are we cooked? Are the phones just ruining us and now our brain's broken and we have ADHD?
I think we're cooked in the same generation. Like, the boomers and older generations are cooked for having drank a lot of lead. Like, that generation will permanently bear the scar of it, but I don't think humanity permanently bears the scar. Like, I think we realize that things are bad and we adjust. Like, lots of countries have really pushed back, for example, on phones in schools. There's a big push globally right now towards increasing minimum ages for social media and better parental vigilance about kids' uses of social media. So I think, yeah, Gen Z and us millennials probably bear a scar of that. The boomers are definitely cooked. I've seen boomers scrolling Facebook and Reels and TikToks and stuff. Like, they already, between the lead paint and the phones, like, they never stood a chance. But I think we, like, get better over time. I think we can limit the harm of these things. Like, harm reduction is possible once we're aware of the harms.
Like, one of the reviews I was reading did talk about kind of many of the things we talked about. So obviously, while you're using your phone, your attention is way lower. So don't try and use your phone while driving. Don't try to use your phone while walking, all of those things. That's pretty obvious. But then the effects we talked about, having your phone present also affects your attention. Yeah. But they did say that kind of, and not to say that this means that there can't be an effect, but as far as we're talking right now, long-term effects of smartphones tended to show weak or inconsistent links. They talked about a review from 2018 that showed kind of inconsistent links. There was one where having notifications on increased hyperactivity symptoms, but this kind of went away when you turned it off again. But there was some discussion, and I know you're against neuroscience talk.
I don't believe that the brain exists. Yeah, so I've never seen one.
But a Hadar 2017 study showed that heavy users showed altered prefrontal activity and reduced accuracy in numerical tasks. But look, maybe dumb guy use phone more because phone is better.
Yeah, like caveman brain was already set up to use the phone.
Caveman brain bad, phone good. Why not use phone?
Yeah, so take more nootropics so your brain is strong enough to resist the phone. No, I think like this is why I use the language of harm reduction when you asked if we're cooked. Because, yeah, I think, like, obviously driving while watching TikToks is pretty bad. And the effect of driving while your phone is merely in the car or off or whatever else is some unknown level of either harmless or less harm. So I think instead of saying we need to, you know, never even have your phone on in the car, like, just slightly de-escalate, meet you where you are now and step it down a little bit. And, like, yeah, for whatever, 12-year-olds having phones. I'm not necessarily an advocate that like no 12-year-old should be allowed to have a phone, but I like the idea that during class, some schools say, here's a little like phone farm to put them in. So put them away during lectures. Like I think doing these little harm reduction steps from things we know are straight up bad to things that might still have some less obvious or less large effect of harm, like that's a good step. We can step things down without needing to reduce all effects of the phone.
It's also hard to have like behavior change interventions on your phone when you don't have your phone, so that kind of ruins my line of work.
We should actually use your phone more, but only use Diego's behavior change app,
which I was meant to put in the description, but I found some issues that I want to fix before I do.
I thought you were going to say, but you looked at your phone and got distracted.
So does that mean you're going to have a dumb phone now? You're going to start putting your phone outside of the room for podcasts?
Maybe. I didn't right now because I'm at work. So if I put it in a different room, I'm just like in a random study cubicle. So I guess someone could just grab it if it was somewhere else. No, look, like, I don't know. I think it's possible to find small ways to do harm reduction for yourself. So maybe, yeah, leave your phone in your pocket or bag or off while you're working. But it doesn't, just because I'm aware of the harm of something doesn't mean I'm going to eliminate it either. Like I still drink alcohol. Like, I don't know. I will probably leave apps on my phone that I know aren't great for my attention, even though I have purged some that were really bad for my attention, like Twitter.
And which ones are still bad, but you deign to keep?
I've told you before that I end up doom scrolling LinkedIn, but I hope that I will soon have a job, a new job, and I will just delete LinkedIn from my phone. It's probably not amazing that I used to not have my work email on my phone, but then I would always not know what time I was supposed to be at the office the next day. So I added my work Outlook calendar as a tab. But then I always open it to check what time I need to go in tomorrow. And then I'm like, while I'm here, let me check my work email. Little by little.
Okay. So what's the takeaway? Keep your phone. Know the dangers. Know the risks. Do what you want.
Like, yeah, I guess. Be aware that the idea that your phone is really bad for your attention is not just hype. That there is a decent amount of both basic and applied attention research that is showing that it's pretty bad for attention, but then decide for yourself how you want to take action. Jonathan Haidt says like go outside more and
touch grass.
Jonathan Haidt says touch grass basically. If you want to touch grass, I say that's up to you, dear listener. I say it's going to be hard to hear this podcast if you're touching grass and you're not using your phone.
Make sure to have really loud speakers playing out of your house so you can keep your phone in another room while still listening to this podcast.
Exactly, yeah. or really long distance Bluetooth headphones.
And then what about smartwatches? If I have I still have my smartwatch. Does that mean the effect of putting my phone in the other room is null and void?
Well, I think this is like the harm reduction thing. Like, it is definitely better to have like 2 cans of beer per night than like 1 bottle of wine per night. So if a smartwatch is your way to not have the full like anxiety or inability to stop being around your phone, that like you, if you don't want to kind of quit your phone cold turkey or feel like that would not be a sustainable solution, a smartwatch might be a nice step down.
The vape of the smoking world.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, no, I think like this is a good way of thinking about any of these things. Like, something can be better than something else without being perfect, and that's also fine.
I hear a lot of that with kind of food and nutrition stuff, where it's like, oh, this sweetener is slightly increases your thing for this, but then you're like, okay, well, how does that compare to sugar?
And
it's a lot of balancing, being like, okay, yes, this is bad, but this is also bad, and I have to eat something, so
fuck yeah, it. So therefore, I mean, today is Shrove Tuesday, Pancake Tuesday, and in other parts of Europe, here you eat these big, like a bun with a bunch of whipped cream and jam on top of it. And I'm like, well, I have to eat something, and it's a holiday.
And it's free. Free food doesn't have calories, is what everyone says.
Exactly. And yeah, the free hour between like your commute home, if you take the bus or whatever, that doesn't have calories for your attention. You can use your phone on your commute. Just don't use it while you're at home. Like, find these ways to give yourself a bit of a hit, but also, yeah, try to limit it where you can.
All right. I'm Diego Garialdi, associate professor. Oh, wait.
Oh, congratulations on the promotion.
I promoted myself there. Sorry. I'm Diego Garialdi, assistant professor in computer science in D University College Dublin.
And I'm Justin Edwards, a postdoctoral researcher in the Learning and Educational Technology Lab at the University of Oulu.
And you heard it from us. Take your phones away from your kids or else they become incels.
Exactly.